Harper Lee wrote only one book, just one, To Kill a Mockingbird. It was published 50 years ago this summer. It won the Pulitzer Prize in 1961. A year later, it was adapted to film. Gregory Peck starred as Atticus Finch. We're hearing the theme music from the film right now. And Mary Badham played his daughter, Scout, her first acting venture. The theme song was written by Elmer Bernstein. It has become iconic, not just the movie, but the book. And in honor of To Kill a Mockingbird's anniversary, we're speaking with Mary Badham about her Oscar-nominated role in the film and what she's been doing lately in terms of occupying her time, not acting, but in talking about the book's message of compassion. Is that right, Mary?
Yes, it's been an honor to be a part of this film, and now with the book, I've been traveling around the country, well, plus England and Russia, with The Big Read, discussing To Kill a Mockingbird and the themes therein.
Well, it's an amazing thing when a book can have such powerful impacts on people that somebody can travel around the world talking about the message of the book. Our friend Patrick Henry Bass is the senior editor for Essence magazine. So, Patrick, 50 years later, very few books, you know, have that long a shelf life, let alone a 50-year impact on people. What is it about To Kill a Mockingbird that still resonates with people?
Well, first of all, it's a beautifully written book. So you go to the narrative, and it still holds up, and it still strikes an emotional chord. Atticus Finch may be probably one of our most iconic heroes, and it's given us a national script to discuss race. Never before had we seen race from the point of view of a white family, and a winning white family like Atticus Finch, who was full of flaws. And it was the first time in American history, especially in terms of a novel, that white people began to root for a black character. White readers cried when Tom was killed. You know, so the fact that white readers were coming into this narrative and seeing Tom, who they felt was unjustly accused of raping a white woman, and when Atticus couldn't free him and he was killed, there was this certain connection to an African-American character on the page. And by the time the film came out, December 1962, Mary will have remembered this, very few people saw it then, but in 1963, that's when the civil rights movement really kicked up into high gear and everyone was confused. And the one place where you could find comfort and solace were in the pages of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Well, Mary, let me ask you about making this film. You were 10 years old when you were in the film?
Yes. And you know, for me, as a little kid, I was just kicking around having a good time. I had no idea that I was going to be in such an iconic film. This really had such an important message that we needed to hear at the time. The country was ripe for change, and I hope to think that this was one of the big steps in making that change come about, because To Kill a Mockingbird gave us, you know, the ability to discuss things that before were not able to be discussed.
Okay, but when was that moment when you maybe watched the movie again, maybe read the book again, or what happened that transformed you from looking back at this as a fun thing that you did when you were 10 to suddenly, I want to dedicate my life to spreading this message that was in this book?
It wasn't until much later, after I had my daughter, that I got a telephone call from Professor Inge over at the college to come and speak to his English Lit class, and that was sort of the beginning. I spent a lot of years talking to high schools, colleges, and universities, and then, you know, it morphed into this other thing, this other life with the NEA and The Big Read, at which point I realized this is not just a 1930s black and white issue. This is a book which speaks to now, today, anytime there is ignorance. You know, ignorance breeds evil.
Ignorance and fear, Mary. You know, I can actually see
fear,
you.
Exactly.
I can see you in the movie, hearing, listening to your voice right now. Patrick, you made a really amazing point a moment ago, and that is that To Kill a Mockingbird is almost like Uncle Tom's Cabin for the civil rights movement. I mean, that's an amazing point. I mean, in some sense, readers looked through Scout's eyes to see all these unfamiliar places. And because it was a disarming child like you played, Mary Badham, that gave everyone permission to look where they couldn't look before. Patrick?
Right. It was innocence as juxtaposed to horror. And we have to remember when To Kill a Mockingbird won 3 Oscars in April 1963, the next month was when the children in Birmingham were sprayed with water hoses. By June 11th, Kennedy made his most passionate plea for civil rights that we would remember today had Medgar Evers not been murdered the very next day. Mm. By August, Dr. King had delivered the I Have a Dream speech at the March on Washington. 2 weeks later, 4 little girls were murdered in a church on 16th Street. 2 months after that, Kennedy was murdered. So the end of the innocence of who we were as Americans was gone. It was shattered. And you could go there was nothing else written at the time. You could go to Kill a Mockingbird to recapture that innocence, but also to get a sense of the horror as well.
I think one of the things that has helped this book and this movie last as long as it has is the character of Atticus Finch. I mean, the American Film Institute called him the greatest movie hero bar none ever. And I think that perhaps that might be what we still have a touchstone to.
And what was great about Atticus Finch, and especially Harper Lee's narrative in telling, Atticus Finch didn't have a happy ending. You know,
no.
he was broken. And you had never seen that in literature. I mean, you could go to Russian literature, you can go to French literature, but American literature, to have a hero, a lawyer who loses his case and ends up broken, and he's the best father in the world. I mean, it's a phenomenal feat.
Mary, you remained very close to Gregory Peck throughout the rest of his life. Did he see this character as a defining role in his life?
Oh, I think so. You know, I really do. I mean, all these guys, you know, were young fathers at the time that we made this film. And Atticus had Cecilia and Anthony, and, you know, we really...
When you say Atticus, you always called Gregory Peck Atticus to the end of his day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, he just, that's who he was at home. I mean, what you see up on film with Gregory Peck is, you know, what we got at home. He was just that kind of a person. He was very morally grounded. He was very giving as a father. Whenever we went to him with problems, he was an excellent listener. And that's what it takes to be a good parent. You have to listen to your children. And if we had questions about things, he would come back.
Was it, Patrick, was it the character of Atticus Finch that makes the book hopeful?
It is. And what sealed Gregory Peck's image as Atticus, it was greatly helped by him and his role in Gentleman's Agreement when, you know, he played a character mm-hmm. who exposed anti-Semitism. So, you know, Gregory Peck had the moral high ground in Hollywood, and To Kill a Mockingbird took him to an entire new level.
As a little kid, I'd always confuse the face of Gregory Peck and Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
They seem like the same sort of character.
Gregory Peck was a little more handsome. But Patrick Henry Vass, senior editor for Essence Magazine, a tribute to To Kill a Mockingbird 50 years after its publication. We also spoke with Mary Badham. She starred as Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird. Do you have a takeaway from the book, To Kill a Mockingbird? Join the conversation about this book or the film at our website, thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.